Now, picture this. You're mid-flight, 33,000 feet in the air, when you hear this.
At this time, I'm going to ask that you fasten your seatbelts.
It's then, of course, that you hold on tight and look nervously at the faces of the air stewards for reassurance, because turbulence strikes. Crikey. Beverly McKeown is an engineer and aeronautics professor at Caltech in California, researching efficiency and performance challenges in aerospace vehicle design. And she's part of a team who are trying to solve the problem of turbulence. I spoke to her from California, and I asked her, first of all, what is turbulence?
Turbulence really describes the random, seemingly random motion of a fluid. So you can see this, for example, when dust or leaves are picked up by the wind, or you can see it when you turn your tap up, the flow rate up a little higher, and the flow goes from very smooth to three-dimensional with what we call fluctuations in all three directions.
But is it dangerous?
Is it dangerous? Well, it's the scenario you set up. Yes, of course, there's some danger in flight if you run into what we call free air turbulence. The type of turbulence I look at is really the type of turbulence that's on the wing of the aircraft. And so it's the turbulence that causes maybe half of the drag of a commercial air vehicle, a commercial aircraft. And so that translates to about half of the fuel that's consumed during a flight is just spent in overcoming this little layer of turbulence that's very close to the wing. So that's quite different from the sort of big pockets of free air turbulence that jostle you around and lead you to the seatbelt signs coming on. So if we can do something about this particular layer of turbulence, we can reduce the amount of fuel that's required for an aircraft to make a particular flight. We can reduce how much emissions are produced, we can reduce noise, and really as we start to think about alternative energies, anything we can do to reduce the amount of energy that's consumed to allow us to travel, for example, that's quite an important engineering problem.
Well, let's just say that avoiding it is probably a good idea. So at the moment, how do pilots and planes avoid it?
As you know, you sometimes can't avoid it when you're in flight, and so the pilots will do their best to move around the free air turbulence if they have reports of a particularly choppy area coming up.
What are you doing yourself now at the research center that you work at in California?
So I work at the Graduate Aerospace Laboratories at the California Institute of Technology at Caltech. And that's really one of the focal points, or has been, of the aerospace industry in Southern California. We really look at the science side of engineering. So I'm trying to describe, to visualize and describe exactly what goes on very close to a surface when there's turbulent flow. And so we do that by doing experiments. We do some modeling, so some computer modeling. And as I mentioned right at the start, what we're trying to do is to pull apart a very complicated phenomenon and see if there's a repeating pattern in there. And I say see if there is. There are several repeating patterns that make things look much more complicated than they are. So we're trying to simplify the problem so people can predict turbulence a lot better and ultimately control turbulence, so to change the characteristics of a given patch of turbulence.
By the way, I'm sure as a kid you didn't say, when I grow up I want to be an engineer and aeronautics professor at Caltech in California researching efficiency and performance challenges in aerospace vehicle design. So how did you get into this line of work?
Well, my father flew, he was a flight engineer on 747 aircraft with British Airways. I grew up in England.
Right.
And so as a kid, I was fortunate enough to fly a few times and, you know, be sitting up there at 30,000 feet wondering how on earth I was up in the air and staying there. So I think that was the origin. My next step was that I actually, when I was making a career choice, wanted to fly fast fighter jets, actually. And at the time I was making the decision in England, I was not able to do that as a woman. So I thought, well, I'll do the next best thing and design aircraft. And somewhere along the way, I got sidetracked by the science of what's going on with the flow over aircraft of all different types.
Are you saying that if you had been a man, you would have been allowed to do that?
If I had been a man, I'd probably have just about finished my fighter pilot career,
right,
all being well. Yes.
Well, bizarre. Okay, that's a conversation for another day. But listen, this fluid mechanics, finally. It is the flow of air over a surface, and fluid mechanics come into play when they're designing things like other stuff, like the soccer ball, the football, to be used for the World Cup. I mean, would you have anything, like, do you understand the way that all works? Because I remember the last time, or one of the last times, I think it was, maybe the South African World Cup, when they designed this World Cup ball so well and so differently that the players hadn't hadn't a clue how to use it for the first few weeks.
Well, that's right. So I actually did do a little bit of work associated with that new soccer ball, as we say over here, or football. Mm. It was called the Jabulani, and it was fabricated in a way that made it extremely smooth. So if you think of the classic football, it's got the panels, you know, the black and white panels, for example, or any of the ridges. Those actually work to help the football player in the sense that the ball behaves aerodynamically a little bit better if it's rough. Now, the Scots found this out the hard way when they established the game of golf. So golf balls were originally smooth, and people found out by hitting the ball enough that it got ridged and cut up or it got muddy. They found out that a rougher ball flew better and flew further. And so in that 2010 World Cup, the Jabulani ball was so smooth that it behaved differently. And so the major problem may not have actually been the aerodynamics. It may just have been, as you said, that it behaved differently and that the players were not so used to it. Mm. But from an aerodynamic point of view, there's a little bit of a sort of non-obvious statement there, that the smoother the ball, the less easy it was to play with. That's a speculation. So there's been quite a bit of work associated with that. But the phenomenon of surface roughness helping a ball fly better or truer is well known in fluid mechanics.
Yes. All right. Well, listen, Beverly, as in Beverly McKeown, engineer and aeronautics professor at Caltech in California, researching efficiency and performance challenges in aerospace vehicle design. Thanks a million for talking to us, Beverly.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.